Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It's hour two, 5 minutes away. Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Got to be honest with you. Had another woman come up to me today and say they liked my facial hair. My entire life, I've never had a woman come up and compliment me. I've had like six of them in a month.
I told you a long time ago, I'm a facial hair fan. I like facial hair on men. I think it makes you look younger.
I don't know what it makes me look, but I am liking the attention I'm getting. Is this Goulet's life? Do you walk around women talking about your facial hair all the time, Goulet?
It generally comes up, yes.
Yeah. Wow, I really like it. So that, of course, is Joy Taylor, Greg Cosell in a couple of minutes. So it is amazing that Jimmy Butler, I thought of him one way, and then he embraced the system, and I'm like, oh, I love Jimmy Butler. And Cam Newton, I thought one way, and then he embraced the system, and I'm like, oh, my God, I really like Cam Newton. He can embrace the system. I'm not anti-independence. But if Antonio Brown would have embraced Pittsburgh, he'd still be the best receiver in the NFL. Sometimes you just have to let a little independence go, trust the coach, trust the really good system that's already in place. Pittsburgh's in place. New England's in place. Miami's in place. They know what they're doing, too. Not just you, not just the athletes. Sometimes the coach does, too. And this is Kyrie Irving struggled with, I'm not going to listen to the system, and it didn't work. And Cam is not going to win comeback player of the year. Alex Smith's going to get that. 20 surgeries, Alex is going to get it. But I'm going to give, I'm not a big award guy, but I'm going to give Cam an award. I'm going to call him the Cam back player of the year. I'm introducing a new award. It's a one-time only. Cam gets my Cam back player of the year. Because I think it's a fascinating situation. Like Jimmy Butler, I literally think of Cam differently. The willingness, and not everybody will do it in any sport, to say, all right, I need help. I need coaching. This system works. I'm going to relinquish a little bit of my independent spirit and do this. And it's really good. And I watched them against Seattle. Oh, my God. And I watched them without Cam against Kansas City. Oh, my God. And here's what's fascinating about this proposition. New England doesn't pay full boat for anybody. They didn't for Brady. They're not going to give him 30. That's not what they do. They didn't do that with Tom. They don't do that with anybody except like Belichick loves his corners. Maybe a Stephon Gilmore. And Cam, if you extrapolate his numbers, because this is a very specific offense, is going to end up with 10 touchdowns, 10 picks, 3,500 yards, and an 89 passer rating. But stats can be overrated. He's completely a difference for this roster. He is their best playmaker. So he has real value for an organization that values him but doesn't pay. But in fairness to Cam, he's never made the big boy franchise money. And this year, he's playing for free. And if he stays healthy, he's got 4 years left. I would not blame Cam saying, there's about seven teams need a quarterback. I'm not taking pay cut. Brady was different. Brady had made a lot of money. Brady was, by the end, by year like 12, 13, he's married Giselle. They got a $400 million net worth. That's different. Cam has never been paid really huge money. Didn't even get the advantage of a franchise tag. He's playing for free. So what do you do with Cam? And I said this, give me about two more weeks of Cam, and I think I would give him a two-year contract. And I would pay him in the, I don't know what I'd pay him. That's up to the salary cap. But it's fascinating. Cam has every right to test the market, and I do believe now he's going to have a market. Absolutely, he's going to have a market somewhere. I mean, winning's too important, and he's been too instrumental for New England. But they don't pay, and they didn't pay Brady, and they don't pay offensive people. They just don't. So I'm going to give him my Cam back player of the year because I think he's been instrumental in making New England, in what we thought was a rebuilding year, a really fascinating piece that may be perfectly built to beat Kansas City. And for that matter, a Green Bay or a Seattle on the other side. Greg Cosell has been working for 41 years at NFL Films. You bet football, you're a fantasy football player. There's nobody like him. We call it our NFL meat sandwich, and he is joining me now live. So let's go to, I said earlier today that Green Bay feels like the least flawed team I've seen. I like Seattle and Tennessee, but they have no pass rush. Pittsburgh is beating bad teams and letting them hang around. You know, I like Kansas City, but could you stop falling behind by double digits on a regular basis? But I look at them. Baltimore appears to play better with a lead than from behind. And then I look at Green Bay and I'm like, they're good on third down, 6.8 yards a play, the sack differential. You can't get to their quarterback. They get to yours. But we all pay attention to LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and we should. But
no
I look
question.
At but when you look at the tape of them, do they have a flaw? Because I can't see it yet with Green Bay.
Well, you know what's really interesting, Colin, and by the way, nice facial hair.
Thank you.
But what's really interesting about Green Bay is they do not play very much man-to-man coverage. And in today's NFL, you always think that, hey, you have to be able to play man coverage in this league to be really, really good on defense. And they don't. It's not necessarily a flaw. It's just something that I find fascinating when I watch them. And it's obviously a choice made by Mike Pettine. He's got two corners in and Alexander and King, who I think can line up and play man, but they just don't do a lot of that. So it'll be interesting. But offensively, they're fascinating now because the Matt LaFleur influence is clearly present in the motion, in the play-action pass game. This is now Matt LaFleur's offense that Aaron Rodgers is executing at a very high level. And if you notice through the first four games, because they've had a bye, so they're 4-0, you don't see Rodgers running around as much. There have not been as many improvisational Rodgers plays. There have been far more pocket throws.
Here's a team that's good, but there's something that doesn't quite work, and it's Pittsburgh. I know they run to the ball. They're very athletic defensively, but they don't average much yard per play. They let bad teams hang around. Tomlin's a veteran. Big Ben's good. The defense. So they are one of those teams that they could win playoff games. I don't doubt that. But there's something missing for me. And you look at the film on the Steelers. What's missing that I just don't feel?
Well, I think that their corners have been a little up and down this year. Hayden and Steven Nelson. I think they've had good moments, but also some bad snaps. The pass game's been interesting. They've got a ton of weapons, and at times you'll see schemed plays like the game-sealing touchdown to Claypool this past week was a clearly schemed play based on what they had gotten throughout the game against the Eagles. But they've not really been explosive as a passing team this year, given their weapons. I think that's the next step for their offense. And maybe they're just sort of working that in as the season progresses. Obviously, it was a different kind of offseason and training camp, but it's not an offense that has really been explosive. And I think they have the people to do that.
So they play Cleveland this week. I think Stefanski, it's so funny. Last week, first half, I thought Baker played an exquisite half of football. Second half, he reverted to some Baker stuff. What was the difference between the first half and second half on what they were calling?
I think quite honestly, and again, you know me, I don't do hot controversial takes, Colin. I say what I see on film. I quite honestly don't believe Baker Mayfield has played that well. They're 4-1, and their run game has been really good, and Stefanski has great concepts in the pass game. That are executed really well. But I think Baker is playing a little fast, both mentally and physically. I think he needs to slow down his entire process. He overstrides at times because he plays so fast and he throws those high fastballs. He's a very talented kid. I think he's got a really good arm. We've seen him be exceedingly accurate throughout his career at times. But I think that for them to get to where they believe I'm sure they can get to, he's going to have to play a lot better than he's playing now.
So it's funny about Andy Dalton. First 4 years in the league, he and Dak's numbers, I mean, they just mirror each other. They really do. It's interesting. And I think there's this sense now that, well, let's taper the offense down a little. But the truth is, Andy, when he had weapons, he's not going to carry a team. But when he had weapons in Cincinnati, he was very efficient, and he can make most of the throws. And I watched that I watched that last drive last week, and I thought, oh, this is a franchise quarterback. This is not – he's only 32, Greg. There's a lot of throws in this arm. Will the offense, in your opinion, change dramatically with Dalton instead of Dak?
Well, to me, they have to make a decision as to how they want to play based on their defense, Colin. Their defense has not been very good, and it gives up a lot of points. So normally, when your defense is like that, you try to at least to some degree limit the number of plays that it's on the field. And you do that by running the ball. And it's not as if they don't have a good back or can't run the ball. Now, Dak is a really good quarterback, and he put up huge numbers. I had a coach tell me that in this offense that Andy Dalton could essentially do what Dak does. Now, whether that turns out to be numbers, that's not the point. The point is, can he run the offense efficiently? And I believe he can. Clearly, they have weapons, and they have a great back who my sense is they need to lean on a little more, not because of Dalton, but because of their defense.
Well, I'll make Cowboy fans pretty optimistic for Cowboy fans listening to our show. So one of the surprises of the weekend for me was how Washington so easily dismantled, how the Rams so easily dismantled Washington. Goff mostly had good pressure. This is a very capable defensive front for the Washington football team. And I came out of that game and I thought, they're going to go east again. They're going to get pushed around up front. Goff's going to be pressured. And I, after that game, I'm like, I think maybe I'm underselling the Rams a little bit. They've done something offensively. I don't know. It just feels like maybe there's the Gurley situation's gone. There something is working this year that I didn't see last year. Are they healthier? Is it schematic? But they are more forceful, it feels like to me, point of attack this year.
Well, I think you're seeing a young coach continue to develop with his scheme. Every coach has basic concepts and schemes that they use because coaches coach what they know. But then you build upon those, you expand those. And I think you're seeing a young coach doing that. McVay is one of those coaches who is just kind of a lunatic in a good way. He loves this stuff. He works at it. You're seeing an expansion of basic principles. How they get to those principles at times is different. They had a play this week that's very reflective of that when Gerald Everett lined up as an I formation fullback and ran a route and ended up catching it for 40 yards. So they're just taking their basic concepts and adding and tweaking and expanding. And I think offensively, they're one of the most overlooked teams in the league because people have this narrative about Jared Goff that he's not a great player. And there is a programmed element at times to his game, no question. But they're doing more things, and Goff happens to be a very good thrower.
Yeah. No, there's no question. I always felt there's a Matt Ryan quality to him, some limitations, but I think he throws a beautiful deep ball. And when he's in a rhythm, he and Russell Wilson throw two of the prettiest deep balls in the league. It's just a soft, catchable ball that always seems to get the guy in stride. So here's an interesting, first impressions are really important. So my first impression of Ryan Tannehill in Miami is he's okay. He's kind of athletic. He's okay. Okay. Then he goes to this staff. And in his last 17 games, his numbers look a lot like Lamar Jackson's last 17. And I'm not saying he's that quarterback. But is it possible that he was miscast in Miami, and with this staff, he's a very capable player?
Well, he wasn't bad in Miami. There's the sense that he was bad. And by the way, he's a better thrower than Lamar Jackson. But he's a talented kid, and I think it's a case of a really good mix between scheme and player, because they're an offense that starts with Derrick Henry in terms of what they do, both from a personnel standpoint and a formation standpoint. A lot of two tight ends, sometimes three tight ends. When everybody's healthy, they play with a fullback at times. So play action is a major part of what they do. And then you add in the fact that he's got movement ability, both by design with the play action boot game and the ability to make second reaction plays. And one other point, which is often overlooked when people talk about quarterbacks, he's been very accurate. His ball placement has been consistently precise, as we see watching these highlights. And He, to me, is a really solid quarterback in a really good system.
Worried about Josh Allen after that game Tuesday? Anything you see that bothered you?
Well, I'm not worried about him personally. He's been phenomenal against man coverage this year. And in that game, the Titans played over 75% zone. And I think you're seeing that to some degree with Patrick Mahomes as well. You're making these quarterbacks have to read it out and throw through tighter windows. They're certainly capable of doing it. But even Mahomes has been leaving the pocket prematurely. I think for Josh Allen, and I said, I don't think watching the tape, he had a bad game. But I think you're just making these guys have to go through the process a little longer. And sometimes they don't want to go through the process and they know they can move. So they move.
Yeah.
And they'll make some great plays. We know Mahomes can do that and Allen can do it too. But it just they have to go through the process differently versus zone than versus man, where versus man, you pretty much say, hey, I know it's man and here's the guy I want to throw to. Here's the matchup I like.
Yeah. Raiders slowed down Mahomes enough. It was the upset of the weekend. On the film, what jumped out to you in the Raiders' upset of the Chiefs?
Great zone coverage, great eye discipline, a particular concept against Kelce when he was the single receiver to the boundary that was really, really effective because they played zone to the three receiver side and matched up to Kelce with a corner on the single receiver side. So some really good concepts. I thought they played with great eye discipline. That's what you must do. It's eye discipline and leverage in your zone concepts when you play against the Chiefs. You can't play man. They have too much speed. So you play zone. And it all comes down to discipline and leverage and assignment football. But there's been three games this year in which Mahomes has not quite been Mahomes. Now, he's always going to throw for a lot of yards, Colin. But the Chargers, the Patriots, and the Raiders played a lot of zone coverage, and he was not as comfortable, and he starts to move when he doesn't need to. And as I said, he'll make plays. He's the most special quarterback in the league talent-wise. But ultimately, if you can get him out of his structure, then you feel you have a better chance.
Okay, finally, Derek Carr. And I've said this before to you and others, is that, you know, there's a sense that Derek Carr, I think he's like a little more athletic. He kind of reminds me of Kirk Cousins. They're a little reluctant sometimes in
big,
reluctant. Yeah. But I think Derek's a good athlete. I think he throws a pretty ball. He's got a little. I said he reminds me a little of Tony Romo. He's got a little ability to move with his feet and get out of coverage. So, what did you see from Derek Carr, the often criticized quarterback?
Another case where I think the scheme is really helping him now that he's been in Gruden's system for a number of years. Gruden does a great, great job with his use of personnel, his formations. You know, Gruden loves what we call the illusion of complexity. It's a lot of personnel, a lot of formations to get to basic concepts. And I think Carr is getting more comfortable. He's not a turn a loose guy. You have to define it for him. And I think he's feeling much more comfortable within that system. And, you know, we can get to our big play of the week now because it was from last week against the Chiefs, and it was a great example. They got a blitz. So let's go to the play and show it. And by the way, it's a rejuvenation here of Nelson Aguilar. But here you see a blitz with Damian Wilson and Ben Neiman. They're going to blitz. So now what happens here is in blitz coverage, you see the two safeties, Thornhill and Matthew. They're going to match up. It's kind of a zone match situation. And Aguilar is going to run the deep post. So what happens here is Matthew does not have him man-to-man the way you think of man-to-man, but it's a zone match based on the routes. So what happens is Matthew matches up to Aguilar. And you can see on the other side, you're going to get Thornhill. He's going to match up to Darren Waller running the crosser. Again, it's a zone match. He's not in a pure man situation, but you have to match up to routes. And Aguilar just beats Matthew vertically, and it's a great throw, but here's a defined throw, and that's a great example of how you set it up, you know what you're going to get defensively, and you know how Steve Spagnuolo plays it, and you get a big play.
Yeah. Nelson Aguilar have had some drop issues in Philadelphia, but he's
certainly a bunch.
Yeah, but he's certainly talented. He can run. He's got a catch radius. He can make plays. There's no question. Greg Cosell, absolute pleasure. We all got smarter. Good seeing you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet. Mark Sanchez, a former Jet and Eagle, will be joining us today. Cam Jordan of the Saints stopping by as well.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tonight, it's a pivotal game four of the NLCS as the Dodgers look to even the series against Ronald Acuna and the Braves. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on Fox and simulcast on FS1.
Yeah, that'll be the game I'm watching tonight. Dodgers-Braves, a big one. Because if Atlanta wins, what do they lead? 3-1 in the series, it could be over. So this is the big game in America tonight. We have no Thursday night football.
Yes, rescheduled to Monday.
By the way, I like Tuesday night football. I'm not going to lie.
It was fun.
I thought it was great.
And it was early, too.
It was.
It was a nice little afternoon football
game.
So
what time is this on again? This is on?
Tonight at 7:30 Eastern.
So 4:30 is the first cocktail.
Yeah, okay. I guess so early. It's early for us, you know.
West Coast is way better that way.
We function as if we are the only people that exist in the world out here. I'm like, oh, it's early. Meanwhile, it's not early on the East Coast at all, but it's fine.
RecTech, more than a grill, it's a lifestyle built by grillers for grillers. RecTech with a Q.com, RECTEQ.com. Here's Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
All right, let's talk about that game. So the Dodgers offense came alive against the Braves.
It did.
In game three of the NLCS. They scored 11 runs in the first inning, which are the most any team has ever scored in a single inning of postseason game. And they set a Dodgers franchise record for the most home runs in a postseason game with 5. LA avoided the dreaded 0-3 hole with a 15-3 win and will look to even the series at 2-2 tonight. Coverage for Game 4, as I said, begins at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on Fox and FS1. Clayton Kershaw will get the start for the Dodgers tonight.
He will.
Yes, he missed Game 2 with back spasms. He'll be starting tonight, and the Braves will start Bryce Wilson.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. Like, when you're down 2-0 in a baseball series, it doesn't feel definitive. In the NBA, if you're down 2-0, it just feels like the better team won. But baseball's so much about pitching. If Kershaw comes out and gives you 6 1/3 tonight, deals, it's like, all right, we're tied up, and the momentum's all with the Dodgers. Like, there's momentum in baseball. It's the old cliche. It's just who's starting tomorrow on the mound.
Right. I mean, really, we shouldn't look at NBA series that way either, because the home team should win the two games at home.
You'd think in the bubble it was, but in basketball, it's like, I always go back to the YMCA. In basketball, if you put 10 guys out there, the better guys usually win. They just usually win. There's matchup issues. In baseball, if you just, you got a guy who's throwing 97 and it's got movement and you can't hit it, it doesn't matter how many, you could have 7 superior players to their 9, and if he's dealing, the catcher's calling a good game, game over.
Well, I'm looking forward to that tonight, and I'm sure LA is going to be locked in on that.
Yeah.
So Dak Prescott is on the road to recovery following ankle surgery. He took to Instagram today to give an update on his health and to thank everyone for their support for him during this difficult time.
I can't thank you enough for all your love, your support, your prayers over the last few days. They've been more than overwhelming. I'm in great spirits. I'm going to stay that way. I'm looking forward to this football season, seeing the game in a different perspective, excited for God's purpose and God's plan. I know it's bigger than anything that I see or that could have imagined. I'm ready to get this journey of the comeback started. So God bless you all. Thank you.
He's incredibly likable. He is one of those guys. I've told you this before. I have this discussion all the time with friends. These are 25-year-old kids. And by the way, most have been great athletes when they were like 12.
Right.
And so, you know, school's a little easier and life's a little grooved and you get a little extra this and extra that. We are so lucky right now in the NFL. Our star quarterbacks are so humble. Do you know what a jerk Patrick Mahomes could be?
Why should he be? I mean, people who have accomplished far less are complete jerks. Yes. I mean, I sometimes think about, you know, how young some of these guys are.
They're kids.
I mean, like, I'm significantly older than most of these star athletes. And I'm like, if I was 20, like, you couldn't tell me nothing at 21. You could tell me nothing. No, ask anyone in my family. I mean, you heard Jason on
South
Beach
when
you interviewed him.
$30 million a year.
I would be in the worst, like the absolute worst. It's just like he said, God has a plan for everyone. There's a reason things went for me the way they did and for you. Like some people, we can't handle it. I couldn't handle it. I wasn't prepared for that.
To be
a face of a billion-dollar organization.
The National Football League should just knock on wood and thank its lucky stars. the stars of this league are the best kids. They're like, the draft this year was amazing. When they held the draft and they went live to everybody's house, and the tears and the family and the love, it's like they all had great support systems, and it may not have been the structure that your family has, but it was like, oh my God, this is, I thought it was one of my favorite drafts of all time.
It was.
It was so, you know.
I mean, it was very memorable, obviously, because of the situation, but I liked it. I thought it was much more intimate. Now, look, I know the fans have an amazing time at the draft, and they're going to get back to having
it. I get it, but I'd seen that a million times.
Yeah, I thought it was really special, but I mean, he's so easy to root for.
Oh my God.
He has a very contagious spirit, right? To go through a devastating injury like that, where he's going to be out for 6 months. He also said in the video that he was going to the doctor to see his ankle for the first time since the surgery. So he's like, this is the first step in recovery today. But, you know, he's just so likable. Recovery time for this is reportedly 4 to 6 months. So he'll be back at the beginning of next season. So LeBron is finally out of the NBA bubble, as we know, but he's still at work after getting his fourth ring. He posted a series of stories to Instagram while he watched The Last Dance, and he captured the first one, "Back at it, doing my homework." You know, we were kind of talking off air, like how fast, not that this year has gone fast, but it just does kind of feel like a blur a little bit. And we felt like, it's amazing how so much has happened. Like, we were watching The Last Dance together as if it was live, like something that's happened 20 years ago. We're all locked in, like we don't know the story, and it's live. And then how many over months later, we're watching LeBron win his fourth title, and it's like, after The Last Dance, we felt like there's nothing that could happen to change the narrative about MJ again. Like, we forgot what an all-time superstar he was, what a different world it was, and now we're watching LeBron, and it's like, oh, maybe we can reopen that conversation again.
No, it should open. I mean, I was talking about this last night, is that the one thing I'll say that LeBron does is LeBron elevates everybody. Every teammate's a little better. Michael elevated the team, but Michael took shots away from really good players, and Mike could be Mike punched teammates. Mike could be a tough teammate.
I think for me, Michael will always be the greatest.
Yeah.
Basketball player.
I get it.
LeBron is the greatest all-time superstar in all sports. Like, he's just the greatest superstar we've ever seen in the history of the world. He's incredible.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Well, Mark Sanchez is a former USC football star, NFL. He's got great football knowledge. He's a terrific college football player. Really has great depth. We're going to talk some NFL and some college. Nick Saban will not coach this weekend, and I'm interested, because Mark would know this, if Pete Carroll would have stepped out for a game at USC, Sark was the offensive coordinator, would it have really been a field goal difference? Like, how much does the head coach impact on game day? You would think it's kind of all set out, right? Saban was on Zoom meetings, and we were all set, and he's had the system for 10 years, and the defensive call's the same for 10 years, and Steve Sark is the coordinator, and he's coached at two programs. He has a winning record. He's won bowl games, and literally Saban's like, I can't coach Saturday because of COVID. Boom, the line changes. They go, a field goal. It's like, what? I'll ask Mark Sanchez that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Okay, sometimes in life, your jaw drops. I had no idea Mark Sanchez, USC football star, decade in the NFL, could sing. Last night, Mark Sanchez was revealed as the baby alien on The Masked Singer that airs Wednesday on Fox. It's a big hit show, and Mark Sanchez can sing. And when they awarded it, we'll show the video as we bring Mark Sanchez on. So, Mark, talk under the video. So I'm just going to ask you. So you were in choir in high school. You knew you could. But how come you didn't sing? How come I'd never seen you before?
So I try to keep those karaoke performances private. But that song, It's Time by Imagine Dragons, I've probably performed it at least 20 times at Cipriani downtown in New York in 2010 and 2011. So that restaurant, after games on Sundays when we'd have a home game in the afternoon, I'd go there sometimes with guys on the team, sometimes with just friends in the city. But the restaurant closes kind of early, like at 9:30. And they let down this ladder outside, like on the street, like a fire escape ladder. And you go upstairs and there's this club. And you get a table. It's, you know, 15, 20 tables. They have a DJ. They have a professional male singer and female singer. They give every table microphones, and you sign up to do karaoke from where you're at your table. You don't have to go on stage. And if you suck or you're really drunk, then they just turn down your mic and add the mic from the professional singers that they hire to be there for 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, they kind of drown it out so everybody sounds good. Well, I would always request, you know, Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows, some Sam Cooke songs that I really loved, and Imagine Dragons, It's Time. And me being the competitive jerk that I am, after the performance and after the night's over, I go and ask the singers and the DJs, like, hey, so was that like mostly my mic or you guys a little bit and then mostly me, or how, what was the ratio? You know, I was always very curious. And so they're like, hey, you know, you're not bad. And so I feel like they were just being nice, but I felt comfortable with the song and felt comfortable in the environment, and it was a great experience.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. It's just one of life's surprises. Mark Sanchez can not only carry a tune, but he's a performer. It's great. So it's very interesting. So Nick Saban, because of COVID, can't coach. The line changed 2.5-3 points. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Sark's the assistant. Sark's been a head coach. And I'm thinking, go back to when you were in college. If Pete would have missed a game, would it have affected you? I mean, he had the system in. You had very capable, you had great players, NFL guys. What was Pete worth to you? Like, what would Pete do that maybe an assistant couldn't at USC?
That's a really good question. I feel like he would. He was such a good delegator of authority and wanted to let his coaches coach, right? He didn't want to micromanage, but he did have this way of, you know, maybe he didn't know every single offensive play call and couldn't, you know, install the offense, but he knew it so well. And then it's like understanding the themes of a game. Okay, we're backed up. Yeah, we're going to do a hard count. We're going to try and draw them off sides. Okay, that's pretty easy. You know, third and long, you know, backed up in our own territory. We're going to be conservative on this play. And he would get on the headset and kind of say stuff like that. Like, hey, we're going to take care of the football here, right? You know, just making sure everybody's kind of on the same page. Or, you know, this, here's our 3 2-minute or 2-point plays, our crucial fourth down play, gotta have it play, you know, game on the line type plays. These are our three boys. What do we like? You know, and so he's constantly in dialogue. Or, hey, we're gonna take a shot here, right? Defense, we might get a turnover. If we get a turnover, offense, go for it. Take a shot, man. Blow the top off. Little things like that, right? So he would keep everybody on track, which sounds like the way Coach Saban, when he did that interview yesterday in his press conference, is exactly the same way. And so I don't think they're going to miss. I don't want to minimize his, you know, coaching ability or his presence on the sideline, but he's trained them so well. And this is a credit to Coach Saban, not a criticism, that these guys are ready to coach, especially somebody like Steve Sarkisian. He's had that experience. He knows how to win. He's played in big games, coached in big games. So this is second nature to him. I have no doubt that Alabama's going to look just fine. I mean, they put up, you know, 700 some yards of offense last week. I have no worries about that. The only thing that I'm not worried about, Sark, I'm worried about the defense, man. They're giving up points. They can't stop a nosebleed. Yeah. So they got to figure it out on defense first.
I want to talk about, like most of us knew, you know, we can tell, like Andrew Luck, most of us knew that kid's kind of unique. John Elway kind of level. And Trevor Lawrence has that kind of feel to him that it'd be hard for him to miss. He's just, some kids are just the genetics, whatever it is, they're just kind of built. And then you get guys like Justin Herbert who, we nitpick to death. You know, you're sitting here, well, he's a little mechanical, and we forget that the Oregon offense was kind of conservative. I thought he was going to succeed, but I have been shocked how good Justin Herbert has been. He's just very much a let it rip, let it go. Are you surprised? You saw him play at Oregon a lot, Mark. Mm-hmm. Are you kind of surprised how effective he's been this quickly?
So a little bit surprised, no doubt. I can't lie and say I knew this exactly was going to play out this way, but he was never challenged at Oregon, right? It was like, okay, what's he good at? He can run around. He's big. He can throw the ball down the field. And then we're going to do some of these little Mickey Mouse screens and, you know, easy RPOs and stuff like that. And they kind of kept him in that box. They didn't develop him, right? Like some of the quarterbacks back at USC with the pro style system, these quarterbacks that Coach Sarkisian's putting out, like they didn't develop his potential, right? He's got, the sky's the limit for a kid like this. He's big, he's fast, he's strong, he's tall, he's smart. I mean, he could play. And so now he's in a system where they're challenging him to throw the ball downfield, to make throws in tight windows, to get to a second, third, fourth read. And he's doing it, and he's only getting more and more consistent doing it. So I'm thoroughly impressed with them. And I think this is just a result of understanding the kind of talent you have and then stretching him, getting him in uncomfortable situations, seeing how he responds to it, much like the Masked Singer, Colin. I mean, I had to get uncomfortable. I had to stretch. I had to grow. And you go out there and you give it your best shot.
I love your analogy. I always say about Russell Wilson, my sister doesn't care about sports. And then Russell Wilson happened. I grew up in the Northwest, and she's like, all Sunday she's texting me. And there is a certain magic, maybe it's his religious conviction, that he can literally play poorly. And then against the Vikings in a rainstorm, in the most crucial moment, he's flawless. And yep. And I want you to take, we got about 3 minutes. That is very hard to do. That is very hard for a quarterback in crappy weather to say, you haven't had the stroke today. You haven't had the... Now's the biggest drive, and you're great. What do you think that secret sauce is with Russell? Because he does this a lot.
Pete Carroll. I guarantee you. So Russ has that innate ability. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of this that's Russ. A lot of this is Coach Schottenheimer putting him in good positions. It's a lot of the same. I'm texting Shotty the other day when they're playing against the Miami Dolphins, and I said, did I just see you run Act 4 Cobra Dancer, like the second, third play of the game after you got the interception up the sideline to DK Mecca? And he goes, it was actually Hinge, but it converted versus Cloud, so same play. Yeah, Dancer. I'm like, dude, you guys are running the same stuff. It's not like something crazy, but Shotty has understood, and credit to him, that when he gives Russ a play, that's not necessarily what's going to happen. That's just like an essay prompt. Russ is going to take this thing wherever he wants. And they trust him to do that because he's been in these situations now before with Coach Carroll, understanding rule number one, the ball is most important. So he's really molded and adapted himself to be a lot like Pete Carroll, and he had a lot of those qualities anyway. So Coach Carroll harped on us that you can't win the game in the first three quarters. You can win it in overtime and in the fourth quarter. That's it. That's the only time the game's over. So I don't care what happens before that. We can win this game, and we will win this game, or we're just going to run out of time. So you never lose, right? That's Pete's mentality. And he has this incredible ability to convince you of that. And now Russell is just living out that conviction, right? So Coach Carroll would also say, like, before he knew enough about coaching and understood who he really was, what he really wanted, what it was supposed to look like when someone came to his practice and saw his team play, he went and saw Rick Barry speak. And he spoke for an hour, whatever, took questions, whatever. And Pete ran up to him and was grabbing on him at the end of the talk. And he says, you know, how do you come back when you have a bad start? You know, you miss your first 10 shots or something. How do you reset? What's your mindset? You know, and Rick said, well, I don't know. I'm a, you know, 30 or 40, whatever percent shooter. So if I miss my first 10 shots, you better look out because the numbers even out and then I'll be on fire. Yeah. So Pete took that, internalized that, inculcated that, and now he's living that out and preaching that to his players. He preached that to us, that no matter what, something good is around the corner. Quarterback, you throw an interception, something good is right around the corner if you're tough enough to hang in there and let it play out the right way. So that's what we're seeing from Russ, and credit to him and Pete Carroll for that perfect marriage.
So great having Mark Sanchez around. Look at that. What a life. Singer, football analyst.
I want to know what Joy said. What did Joy say?
I saw it on your Instagram stories, and I was in shock. Like, I just,
what do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I just, you're on the Masked Singer. That's like, what do you mean?
What do we mean? Of course we're shocked.
We should be shocked. That's the point of the show.
I didn't know you could sing.
No,
Joy.
I knew you could sing, but that's like, that's very intense.
Yeah.
Like, I would be very nervous to do that.
I can sing, not in front of people.
They're not asking me to do that show.
We all sing, just not like that on a show.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Mark, it's great seeing you, buddy.
Great to see you too. Thank you.
All right, Mark Sanchez, good dude, former NFL quarterback. Yeah, I mean that's like performance. Like you stand singing in front of people, you gotta be. That's vulnerable.
Listen, he's talking about like not doing Dancing with the Stars. That's like crazy too. When Jason did that, and I saw it in person, I'm like, oh my god, no! It's crazy. Like those shows are so big, and the production, and like it's wild.
It really is. He's a performer.
Yeah.
Upgrade of the wiper blades trusted by those in bad weather. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades. Walmart has them. Last 2 times longer than other blades. Cam Jordan of the Saints, one of the great pass rushers in the NFL in the last 10 years. Smart dude. He's going to be joining us as we move to hour 3 in the herd next.